All right, this is our last study in our series, The Measure of a Man. We're in Titus chapter 1, verse 8. Timothy and Titus both list, you know, the qualities of an elder and deacon. And a lot of them are overlapping or are nuances. And so by the time we get to Titus, looked at a couple of things from there. But one of there's this phrase in Titus 1, 8 that I really like. And it's a great place to end this study, as it were. And it's the phrase there that says, a lover of what is good. The phrase translates a single Greek word, a compound word, philagathos. Philos or philos is friend, and agathos is benevolent. And so you're to be the friend of benevolence, of doing good. It would encompass both loving and then performing what is good. So meditating on that, I thought, well, how do you love what is good? And Philippians 4:8 might be a good place to start. You might as well turn there, because we're going to look at that verse as a commentary on this. So Philippians 4:8, you're familiar with it, of course. It's a sort of commentary on how to train our hearts and minds towards that which is good, to be thinking about that which is good, which would be the basis for then performing that which is good. And so I'll read Philippians 4:8 to you. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, there's any virtue, and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. God expects our active cooperation in guiding our thoughts. Whenever you find your thoughts wandering down questionable paths, you must step in and discipline your mind. And these are some of the things that you can guide your mind to think about. He starts by saying whatever is true. A guy by the name of Walter Kavert reported a survey on worry that indicated only 8% of the things people worried about were legitimate matters of concern. The other 92% were either imaginary or involved matters over which you had no control. And so you need to fill your mind with truth, God's truth, as the absolute foundation of right thinking. So many of our emotional and spiritual problems stem from false thoughts, especially about God and about His love for us. And so we need that washing of the water by the Word to understand what is true. And then you want to guide your thoughts towards whatever is noble. This means worthy of respect. Today there's a preoccupation with baser things. I had written in my notes, just review topics on daily talk shows. You know, people just seem to be drawn to base things. And we're not talking Jerry Springer. I mean, these are just the normal talk shows now. Everybody's kind of in the gutter about things. And we should rather occupy our thoughts with things that are worthy of respect. Guide your thoughts towards whatever things are just. Just comes from the root word for right. Many things are not just, they're not right. They tend to lead you towards thoughts of retaliation and revenge, especially if you're the victim of some wrongful treatment. Look at Paul, who wrote this when he was, you know, in Philippi, mistreated. He thought about the Lord, and he sang hymns at midnight. If he had brooded over all of the wrongs done to him, he would have become bitter, and he would have been useless in the service of the Lord. And so Paul, a great example there in the church in the prison at Philippi, as I understand it, also in stocks, not just in a prison cell, a dank, dark, you know, dungeon type thing, but actually, you know, in a stockade kind of a situation. He and Silas singing hymns at midnight, and God honoring that with the famous earthquake and jail break that he prevented and stuff. So, you know, certainly he wasn't being treated justly, but he guided his thoughts towards whatever was just and right. And then you want to guide your thoughts towards whatever things are pure. This is a timely word. Society's given free rein to pornography and perversion and all the media. You must endeavor to exclude as much of the impure as possible. If not, these images will be lodged in your mind. They lurk there until they make their presence known at the weirdest times. Author John Phillips says, if a person once lets his thoughts wander down some impure path, hidden legions joyfully emerge and stampede, pushing the mind into all kind of sin. And that's certainly true. I think we've all experienced that. Guide your thoughts towards whatever things are lovely. These are the things that are gracious and kind. 1 Corinthians 13 tells you that love believes all things. Love gives the benefit of the doubt and thinks graciously of others. Guide your thoughts towards whatever things are of a good report. This would include having edifying conversation and using words that build up rather than break down. Guide your thoughts towards whatever things are virtuous and praiseworthy. These words are kind of general summary of this discussion. In other words, don't waste your time thinking about anything that isn't morally virtuous and worth commending to others in order to build them up in the Lord. And then Paul says, meditate on these things. He means to make deliberate choices to guide your mind. Christian meditation is thinking on God's truth. It's, you know, if you're like me, most people think of meditation kind of in the sense that we looked at it briefly in our news item this morning, where you would empty your mind or repeat a word or, you know, try to focus your attention on something or whatever. And Christian meditation is quite the opposite, is to fill your mind with God's truth. It's to think about God's truth. Your mind doesn't automatically think on certain things. Because of the fall, because of indwelling sin, because of the world around us, we have a bias towards the base and the degenerate. But the indwelling spirit can assist you in guiding your thoughts. And so meditation is almost like a warfare that you're involved with to control your mind. And you need to know that everything else is against it, especially the world. The world is kind of the catalyst that the devil uses to appeal to your flesh to get your mind off track. Now, if you have this mental discipline, the kinds of things that Paul's talking about in Philippians, then you're ready to love what is good. To begin with, certain things would be good. One commentator listed spiritual things like prayer and preaching and reading and spiritual conversation, and he says every religious exercise. And so spiritual things are good things that we want to love. Our hearts ought to strongly desire doing these things and the many other things that accompany the Christian life. Sadly, we can get to a place where we still love them, but only in part or in parts. By that I mean we can start to compartmentalize our lives. We'll do certain spiritual things, but we also get involved in many carnal things. We can be one thing at church and something entirely different in the world. I mean, there's a, you know, it's a classic hypocrisy that people talk about in the church, where, you know, you go to church and you're one way, you have a certain language and a certain demeanor and a certain way of doing things, and then out in the world, there's no, no one would ever recognize that you're the same person, practically. These are always tough discussions because, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to quit our jobs or not have hobbies or not go on vacation or things like that. It means that we need to infuse those things with a sense of the presence of God. And we just need to be real about our lives. And I think probably if we look at our life and we think, well, I'm not really doing that, then probably we don't have the previous mental discipline of just thinking on the things that are lovely and true. Because it is possible to infuse every area of your life with the Lord and to still do things, you know, and to do them as unto the Lord. I always think of, you know, Christians get criticized for it, but it's, you know, if somebody's doing this, then they make a Christian group that's doing it, you know. So let's do that with Christ. Let's be a witness and let's be a testimony and let's not hide who we really are. This same kind of thinking can spill over into our fellowship with other believers. We get together and almost banish any spiritual suggestions such as prayer and godly conversation. It's kind of like, well, this is what we do at church, or if we're in a meeting, you know, at the church. But here I'm at your house, you're at my house, and so that, you know, we're Christians, but we don't have to talk about it. We don't have to talk about the Lord. We just, you know, do whatever else that we're going to do. And so, you know, I'm not saying that every time you get together you have to break out a guitar and worship, you know, and stuff. Hey, let's just worship the Lord. But, you know, we're Christians. We should talk about things that are meaningful on an eternal level. A lover of what is good constantly and consistently loves spiritual things. They're always a part of his life and lifestyle. Some translations also render this phrase we're discussing as a lover of good men, and I get two things from this. First, you desire to be around good men, godly men, who will both cherish and challenge you. And second, you'll desire to see other men grow in their godliness. And so to simplify that, you need to be a being discipled, and you need to be a discipler. And so, and I think that's really God's plan for all Christian men. You're always being discipled, and you turn around and disciple someone else. Discipleship takes many forms. There's a classic understanding that seems to be you choose someone to sort of pour your life into, and then you hang around with them as much as possible. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the only method of discipleship. And I only bring that up because over the years I've seen a lot of people disappointed because they couldn't find that one person, you know, that one mentor that was going to really take them under their wing. And when all the while there were all kinds of opportunities, they were being discipled by many different individuals in many different ways. And so that's fine. I mean, if God puts on your heart to be getting together with one particular person, or to, you know, to be a Paul Timothy kind of a thing, that's fantastic. But that's not the only way that people are discipled. And when we get tunnel vision about that, we can tend to become very frozen and disappointed. I looked at the example of Jesus thinking about this. It's true, he called the 12, and then they seemed like they all hung out together for 3.5 years. You know, they were just with each other. But in that group, he had some that he was closer to than others. You know, some of the disciples are not really mentioned much at all once they're listed. And then you get to Peter, James, and John, and then you get to John, who seems to think he was the favorite, you know, and he was the disciple that Jesus loved. And so Jesus had this model for discipleship where, yeah, I have these 12 guys, and they're following me around, listening to my teaching, we live together and all that. But even within that group, there were different dynamics. And that tells me that the dynamics of discipleship aren't as simple as just getting one-on-one with someone. And in you guys know kind of where I'm coming from with some of this, but we live in a real touchy-feely kind of a culture where everybody wants to be the disciple that lays his head on your breast, you know, where I'm the special guy that you're discipling. And sometimes God does that, and sometimes he doesn't, and so we just need to broaden our understanding. Every time you hear the word taught, it's a form of discipleship. It may not be very personal. And I understand the need for more of a personal discipleship. That's fine. Nothing wrong with it. But you know, God is always discipling us. You can disciple others on a more random basis whenever you're around them with no set schedule. You know, if you're a Christian and you're around other Christians, be cognizant of the fact that whether you think so or not, some other people are looking up to you, or at least looking to you, and they're wanting to see how you act, how you react, what you say about certain things, whether you immediately think about spiritual things or whether that is something that is farther back. So I'm not against the classic one-on-one discipleship. I think it's good and there's a place for it, but we do need to broaden our thinking about what discipleship is. And if you've been a Christian for any length of time, you need to start considering yourself a discipler of other men. Pick someone to disciple if you want, or get a group of guys together and go through a book or some other material. I think there should be lots of independent groups like that where guys say, "Hey, I invited four guys and we're going to go through The Measure of a Man, or we're going to go through Keith Hughes's book, Disciplines of a Godly Man, or something like that." And you know, I've been a Christian for a while, and I don't feel like I have a gift for teaching, or maybe I do, but you know, I just want to impart what God has done in my life to other men. And so again, you're always being discipled in a variety of ways, and you're to think of yourself as a discipler. I mean, Jesus said, as you're going through the world, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to make disciples, you know, and so that is just in your daily life as you're moving through life. And the way that happens, to wrap this up, you start thinking on what is good, and then you start applying it in all your contacts and conversations with others. And so really the battle is won in the extent that it is a battle in the mind, where you say, hey, I'm going to think on good things. I'm going to think about good things. I'm going to be around good people. I'm going to discipline my mind, and it's going to be a beneficial thing so that I can impart what the Lord is teaching me to others. So be a discipler and let guys benefit from what you know.